Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, how are you doing?
Boker Tov. Well, if you want to talk about painting the town red,
mm-hmm.
then listen to this little story. A Tel Aviv resident was arrested for pouring red paint into the pool that's part of the fountain at Dizengoff Square in Tel Aviv. No idea why this person decided to do that, but you can imagine someone going to a public fountain and pouring red paint into the pool. Apparently, the guy was found to have bought containers and bags with red paint. I mean, he came well prepared. It wasn't just like a spur of the moment.
Yeah.
Sounds like he'd gone out to the paint shop and really got his supplies ready. Who knows why he wanted to paint the fountain, but it's really strange.
Very, very strange. Is he an artist? Or is just an idiot?
I think the latter more than the former, to be honest. And just also a quick reference to, again, another Israeli attack or a purported Israeli attack.
Alleged targets.
In Syria. Mm. Yeah, we're not sure. There wasn't any confirmation on either side. But from Syrian reports, we understand that Israel attacked Syrian targets, apparently in the village of Zakir, which is just south of Damascus. Apparently, anti-aircraft missiles were fired from the Golan Heights. This apparently took place around 11:30 last night. We understand that the area is really used by Iranian forces. And so it all kind of does stack together that there is a story to be told here, which does make some sense. Iranian militias apparently located in that particular area. Property damage was reported, but we don't know anything more about the attack than that.
And certainly it's a story that just keeps happening over and over again, so much so that it becomes less news, which is really fascinating. This is a big story, and this is one that I know a lot of people were talking about last night on social media. There is a government recommendation to lift all remaining COVID restrictions. And I know that the big one, the one that a lot of people are concerned about, are unvaccinated children, because here in South Africa, we are not able to vaccinate our children below the age of 12, which means that they've had a real problem in traveling to Israel. What is the latest recommendation now?
So in regard to that issue of the unvaccinated children, the reports that I've read have suggested that Israel could well be now reopening to tourists in a much more open way, including those children who have not been allowed to have vaccinations until now. And so really there is a massive move just to almost wipe out all the restrictions that are currently in place. We've already reduced the requirement for people to present green cards when going to restaurants and gyms and things like that. The green card, the green pass rules are now very, very limited to much larger events, to organized events of more than a certain number of people. The other thing which seems to still be that they still want to keep in place is the rules that the government schools, which require antigen tests twice a week and mask wearing at schools. But as far as everything else is concerned, it seems as if the Israeli government is quite intent on removing all of the other restrictions pretty much by the end of this month. And obviously that's against the background of much lower numbers in terms of Omicron. The R rate has really fallen down now to less than 0.7, 0.68, I think was the latest that I saw. The number of serious cases have really dropped down. 911 patients continue to be hospitalized, considered to be seriously ill with corona. 327 critical condition, 28 of them are currently on the ECMO machines. So the numbers are really coming down. The number of people who are diagnosed with corona have come down. It seems to me that I'm guessing around 30% of Israel's population has probably been through corona over the last couple of months. It's quite an astonishing number, and it shows to what extent we've had this massive peak in the number of infections. But really now we feel a much greater relaxation, both in terms of the number of people who've been infected, people around us who we know who had to stay home, who've not been feeling well, whatever reason, and also in terms of the restrictions which are now being lifted, particularly at the airport. We understand that the requirement to have a test before boarding a plane to come to Israel will also be rescinded. However, one of the rules that is planned to stay in place is the requirement to have a PCR test upon landing in Israel. That's something which has been pretty standard almost from the beginning, that when the airport has been open and has been receiving people landing from abroad, whether they be Israelis or tourists, everybody is required to have a PCR test upon landing back in Israel. And I don't think that there is any intention of lifting that particular rule anytime soon. And in a related story, Israel has become the first non-US country to test an Omicron-specific Pfizer vaccine. So apparently Pfizer have developed this vaccine, which is Omicron-specific. I sort of wondered to myself even whether it isn't a little too late.
Well, it's funny. I was reading that as well. Moderna saying that they will have this Omicron vaccine by, I think it's July, August. And I'm thinking, well, what's the point? That'll be so last season.
Yeah, I mean, even now, to be honest, even testing it out now, I'm not quite sure if there might be countries out there which still haven't had the huge Omicron wave. I mean, we know that Omicron is particularly infectious, and we also know that its effects are relatively milder in comparison with previous variants that we've received. Now Pfizer have come out with this Omicron specific version. I'm not sure whether any of us would be really interested in having a vaccine like that, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there are places around there that would welcome something which is Omicron specific. But Sheba Medical Center has become the first non-US research facility. Apparently they will administer 200 doses of this new vaccine, which is designed to increase effectiveness against the Omicron variant in particular. And so again, you know, Israel's medical facilities being chosen to be amongst the first around the world, even if they're trying out something which might be a little too late, I'm not sure. But I guess it just is an indication of the way the respect in which the regard that foreign researchers have for our medical facilities, not only because they are organized, but also because the way in which things are documented in Israel is pretty organized. And so researchers who want to try their new vaccines or new medications from elsewhere around the world quite like the idea of using Israel, because, you know, we have this universal medical care that covers most people in the population. And as I say, the recording system is very thorough indeed. And of course, we have people who are highly competent at what they do. So it's a very, very attractive place to trial such new developments. And of course, we saw it when Pfizer really used Israel as a testing ground for the original vaccines that were produced, much to Israel's benefit at the time. You know, it could have gone either way, but we were very fortunate in that the vaccine was effective and we managed to benefit from it. So again, Israel's medical facilities are being held in high regard and being used for new developments, which I think is always good.
Absolutely right. 7:51. Let's talk about the conflict in Jerusalem. That's continuing.
Yeah, unfortunately, the conflict in Sheikh Jarrah, which is also known to some people as the neighborhood of Shimon HaTzadik, it depends from which side of the fence you happen to come from as to what name you call that particular neighborhood. But I think even amongst Jewish Israelis, Sheikh Jarrah is still much more commonly used to describe that particular part of Jerusalem. And just to remind listeners what the whole conflict is all about, this is an area of Jerusalem which is on the east side of Jerusalem, which has properties that were owned by Jewish owners from the 1800s. At the time of the War of Independence in 1948, that part of Jerusalem fell into Jordanian hands. The Jordanians decided to take this property, which of course was still legally owned by those Jewish owners, even mm-hmm. though the war, the results of the war, found it on the wrong side of the dividing wall that ran down Jerusalem, the central part of Jerusalem. The Jordanian authorities at the time decided to dish those houses out to Arab residents to allow people to live there, which right. they did until 1967, when the area was then recaptured by Israel, and the conflict then resurfaced because those Jewish owners of the property in Sheikh Jarrah decided that they wanted to reclaim those properties. The Arab residents of the property said, "We've been here since 1948. We've been living here for the last 20 odd years. Why would you now decide to evict us from a place where we've effectively had possession for the last 20 years?" And so continues the age-old conflict of that particular area. The courts have become involved. The courts have ruled that, in fact, the properties do belong to the original Jewish owners, even though the courts have also decided that the current Arab residents should continue to be allowed to live there. And there's been some sort of compromise reached where they will be allowed to live there and will not be evicted. The problem, of course, is that over the period of the last few years, many of those Arab residents have refused to pay rental on that particular property, which creates a whole new set of problems, because the Jewish owners say, "Listen, you can live here according to the court rulings and according to the compromises that we've received, that we've reached, so long as you pay your rental. But if you're not going to pay your rental, then we're going to ask you to leave." Mm. And therein lies the problem. And of course, this issue raised itself last year, just before Operation Protection of the Walls, because this was one of the issues that was held up as the reason for the conflict with Gaza, because the Gazans protested against the attempts by Jews to evict Arabs from the neighborhood. In addition to that, certain Jewish people have decided that they wish to take up residence in the middle of the neighborhood in order to bring Jewish possession back to Sheikh Jarrah, which of course has been very controversial. Mm-hmm. And one particular family has had its home attacked and set on fire quite a number of times in an attempt to try to frighten them away from that area. And so obviously that's not acceptable. They don't have the protection that they need. Certain right-wing politicians have decided that they're going to come in and weigh in on the issue in order to be as controversial as possible. And unfortunately, this just creates more and more conflict within the area. Now, I think the answer probably is to allow the compromise that was reached to continue, so long as people pay their rent. If they don't pay their rent, then I think laws would support the possibility of them being evicted for not paying their rent. The question is, if they get evicted, who then takes up possession behind them? Is it a Jewish resident or is it another Arab resident? How does the character of that particular neighborhood continue or potentially change as a result of all of this that's going on? Highly controversial and potentially conflict driven within the city of Jerusalem. Anything that happens in Jerusalem, of course, has a certain edge to it. International community gets involved immediately. Protests on the border of Gaza right away over one particular resident who's being evicted because they haven't paid their rent. It becomes a highly controversial issue, a real mixing pot for disaster. And the question is, what do we do with this particular neighborhood? It's part of Jerusalem. It's part of the United City of Jerusalem, capital of Israel. Arabs and Jews should be allowed to live there in equal measure. We would hope that they would live side by side, but unfortunately, that is not on the agenda right now.
Wow. And it's just so incredible, because to some extent, the story is a very simple one, but it's also portrayed very simply by the negative press, or by people who obviously don't support or in fact, but the opposite, who want to harm Israel, as though this is a situation of Israel really just removing people because they are Arab citizens. It's just quite incredible right. how this has been portrayed in the press.
It's very easy to use it to support one narrative or another. Mm. Very, very simple indeed. People who try to follow the narrative of Jews shouldn't be controlling the east side of Jerusalem because that's an Arab neighborhood that belongs to the Arabs, that should be part of the capital of a future Palestinian state. People who support that narrative obviously have a lot of fuel to add to their fire in this particular story. You're right, it's a very simple story. If somebody was being evicted in the middle of Tel Aviv for not paying rent, whether they be Jewish or Arab, nobody would take any notice. It just would be a standard procedure that would go through the court or whatever would happen, and it would just be an obvious conclusion to a story. People have got their obligations to pay their rent and to live in their house and to protect the property. But here it's not that obvious. And of course, it gets used to tell a narrative which is representative of the ongoing conflict of Jerusalem, the way that the international community views Jerusalem in a very controversial sort of way, the fact that the embassies still are not returning to Jerusalem, the fact that the international community doesn't see fit to put their embassies in the Israeli capital. Is Israel indeed entitled to lay claim to Jerusalem as the capital? What is all this conflict about Jerusalem? Why does everybody want a piece of Jerusalem in this way? And why do people not accept the fact that under the laws of the State of Israel, all of the different religions are entitled to do as they wish in Jerusalem, so long as it's done peacefully and without any negative intentions in mind? Come and worship, come and visit, come and pray, come and visit your holy sites, all of which is free to all those who wish to do so. Why can't we accept that as being the reality?
Absolutely, absolutely right. It's just a very, very strange state of affairs. And finally, Israel confirms that President Herzog will visit Turkey. This is a big story.
It is a big story, and it's a big story because obviously it comes against the background of many years of very tenuous relations with Turkey following the Mavi Marmara affair. The relations with Turkey since then have been very, very conflicted, and lots and lots of issues. We've seen Turkey become a lot closer to Russia and a lot closer to Iran during that intervening period, be a little bit alienated from the United States administration. Now, all of a sudden, Turkish President Erdogan has decided that he would like to try again to reconnect with Israel. I've already discussed and mentioned the fact that I think that this is something of an attempt to get closer to NATO, to get closer to Western powers, and in particular to get closer to the US administration, also to get closer to the gas fields which are being developed by Israel, Cyprus, and Greece, and which Turkey wishes to have a piece of the pie as well. And they see, I think, in President Herzog, somebody who is willing to open new doors, to willing to try things that have not been available over the last few years, and certainly that he's shown himself to be in that sort of category. And so we understand that this visit to Turkey by President Herzog will take place on March the 9th and 10th. We understand that some senior people from Turkey, the presidential advisor and the deputy foreign minister, will be coming to Israel in order to prepare for the trip ahead of time. The president of Turkey has already told the Turkish media that he will host Herzog in an attempt to try to revitalize the strong relations that used to exist between the two countries. Of course, Turkey has very strategic intentions to try and get back in with Western powers. And I think that Israel doesn't object to the idea of having a good friendly relationship with Turkey. But obviously, we're very cautious about the whole Russian-Iranian angle to this. Yeah.